This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is the CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling. Like, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe, Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that will help us grow.
Tonight I'm joined by Don, and you may know Don because Don actually directed Australian Skies 1, 2, and also Australian Skies 3 that's coming out later this year. Don, welcome to the show.
How you going? Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you on, mate. You're like a celebrity, basically, in the paranormal field in Australia these days.
I highly doubt that. But thank you for inviting me on the show.
I really appreciate you coming on, mate. It's exciting because I have watched your documentaries basically back to back over and over. I reckon it's been a good 10, 20 times I've seen Australian Skies 1 and 2.
Oh, wow. That is good to hear. It's good to know someone watched them. So thank you very much.
So you were actually telling me before we hit record that you weren't always into the paranormal. So what got you into making Australian Skies?
I mean, it goes back quite a long way. I work in production, camera production anyway. And I started at the very beginning of it all as a musician and then transferred across into cameras and editing and camera production and whatnot. But I was always interested in documentary making. And I think the paranormal has always been one of those fascinations that I've had even as a child. And I've always been very interested in it. And I grew up, I was very much part of the Star Wars generation. And I think it left an indelible mark on that whole generation of kids. And just to see it kind of progress and so there's always been a bit of an imprint there with the paranormal and ufology and cryptozoology and all that weird and wonderful sort of things. And the other aspect was that for the first part of my life, up to about the age of 9 or 10, I grew up on a farm in the middle of New South Wales, which is part of a community or part of a township that was in the middle of the Pilliga scrub or the Pilliga forest. And if anyone was into, say, Yowies or even Min Min lights or any of this sort of stuff, you would probably recognize the name. And so I think growing up, that first part of my life, I mean, we heard a lot about the strange things that were around us and that sort of stuff. And so I think it left a bit of an imprint.
Right. And did you have anything happen on that farm?
My father did. Here's where I first, I remember being about the age of about 6 or 7. My father was a farmer. We're a farming family. And his best friend was the local police officer. And back in those days, there would be one police officer that would generally look after an entire area, like not just one town, but hundreds and hundreds of kilometres, you know. And, you know, it was in the best interest of the police officer to, you know, obviously get to know the local farmers and who, you know, the pillars of the community and all this sort of stuff. And him and my father became really good friends. And once a week he'd make his way out to our property and on a Friday afternoon or an evening or whatever and have a beer with my dad, you know. And I can remember I used to try and sneak up and listen to what they were talking about. And I have a very vivid memories of hearing this police officer this one particular time talking to my dad about these group of kids, like teenagers, who got chased by a very bright light through the Pilliga forest and trying to coming home to our town or the community that we lived in, and they were getting chased by this bright light and terrified them so much so that they almost rolled their car once they came out of the forest into our township.
Oh, wow.
And they actually went and made a report to him. And my father was, you know, a little bit dismissive of it or, you know, having a bit of a laugh. But I remember them talking more then about the Yowies and things like this. And, I mean, because of where I was, I had a lot of kids in my school, a lot of friends in my school that were Indigenous. And so I was taking a lot of this information I was hearing and going to my friends and saying, hey, guys, have you ever heard of this? And because of their upbringing, cultural differences and stuff, they were telling me stories about their differences and or their upbringing and what they've been taught and stuff like this. So as kids, we were getting this real cross-pollination of information, you know. So, yeah, it made for a very fertile ground. And plus then you've got Star Wars coming out as well and stuff. So it was just the perfect storm as a young child to actually start to get bitten by this wonderment.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine so. And, I mean, being so young and influential, I mean, it would have had a tremendous impact on, I guess, going forward. And is that how you kind of got into the paranormal field in the sense of filmmaking?
No, the very first time I was working already doing camera production, we're doing live events, big events and stuff, and traveling and touring and whatnot. I did something paranormal was, I think it was in 2007, 2008. I think it was 2007. A friend and myself, we went to Las Vegas for a camera conference over there. And we spent, it's like a 5-day conference or whatever. We had a couple of days off, but we just wagged the conference for a couple of days. And I wanted to go out, and I was always fascinated with Area 51. And so I said, hey, dude, look, and my friend's name was Daniel, he's my best friend. And I said, mate, we've got to go out and check out this Area 51. And I had some camera gear with me anyway. And he said, yeah, cool. So we hired a Mustang and we drove from LA out through the Nevada desert out to Area 51. Excuse me. And I filmed the journey, and I was just doing the camera stuff and doing a little bit of the directing. We had no plan. I just said, look, we're just going to roll some tape. And Daniel, a complete skeptic, but completely, you know, loves to have a laugh. He was like, great, I'll be the host. And so we filmed this sort of this thing about this journey of these two Australians going out to Area 51. And we went out there and had a bit of a laugh, and it was a complete piss take, basically. And we came back, and I edited it up, And National Geographic at the time were doing these things for new documentary makers. And we'd been doing our business had been doing content for clients and corporate clients and things like that. We just started getting into this sort of stuff. And I thought, wow, yeah, I'd like to do a bit of broadcast. And so I made up this thing and I sent it to them called the search for Area 51 or something like that. And sent it to them and we won this new thing for new documentary makers.
Oh, wow.
They brought us in and said, hey, look, you've won it. And they gave us some stuff and some prizes and whatnot. And they said, well, what we really want is could you go out now and could you shoot us? And the little documentary thing was about 4 minutes long. It wasn't long at all. It was a Segway documentary. And what they were doing, it was back in the days when they had National Geographic Adventure, the Adventure Channel on Foxtel.
Yeah, yep.
And what they were wanting is they were wanting Segway documentaries to play in between their features, just something local, something kind of kitschy, lighthearted, nothing heavy, just give us something kind of funky for it, something. And this has kind of fit the criteria by fluke. And they came back and they said, loved it, right, you guys are on. Can you make us more? And we sorted out a deal with them and they sent me and Daniel out making this show called The Paranoids, which were these 4 minute documentaries about the paranormal. And they were all very slapstick and very tongue in cheek. But it hit the market, you know, and we made a handful of these sort of pieces for them and they ran them for about 18 months. And so that was really the beginning of it for us. And we went, okay, wow. And then from there on, we just started getting phone calls and we started getting known for it. And so it all just, we went, okay, I was the one that was interested. I'm like, okay, look, I'm interested. I don't want to do any more cheesy sort of stuff. I actually want to now make something a bit more serious. I actually want to go headlong into this to see what's out there. And that's where it began.
Yeah, right. So, how long was the transition between the tongue in cheek documentaries to the full blown UFO investigations?
It came a bit later. I actually went into the paranormal next. We did the Area 51 stuff, and the next step was I was really looking for the next project. I wasn't too sure how to begin. I was all new to me and I didn't even know that it was a community or anything like that. And it would have been around, that would have been about 2007, 2008. Then about 2009, 2010, I happened to be scouring an ad in Gumtree and it was someone looking for camera crew for a paranormal documentary. And I was like, you're kidding. And it was in Sydney, which is where I was living. And I was like, okay, cool. So I entered the ad and I had a meeting with a guy at Parramatta and he came in and he sat down. His name is Rob Kerr and he said, look, yeah, we're making a documentary. We're looking for camera crew. Would you be interested? And we had a bit of a chat about it and what it was. And for me, what I wanted, I was already working. I already had camera work and I was working, you know, in production, so I was fine. But what I was wanting to do is I wanted experience in the paranormal. I wanted an inroad. I wanted to, like, learn, you know, because I was sitting there thinking, I really enjoyed doing the stuff in that geo, but now I want to do something serious. I want to, how much more is there out there, you know? So I said, yeah, cool. And the name of the documentary was Ghost Crew, and it was spelt G-H-O-Z-T Crew. So it had a bit of a play on words, you know. And I went in to these guys at the first I got the phone call to say, yep, cool, come on board. And our first place that I got my call time for was Maitland Jail on the Central Coast in New South Wales. And I turn up there thinking, okay, there's going to be catering and all this sort of stuff. And there's just a couple of guys in the car park with a car with a couple of road cases. I turn up going, where's all the jibs and the camera gear? And they're just going, oh, no, and they're pulling out all these cameras and all these strange gizmos that flash lights and stuff that I'd never seen before. And obviously they were all like mil meters and K2 meters. I had no idea what they were, you know. And it soon became apparent that I was pretty much the only camera guy there, and these guys were the paranormal investigators. And I proceeded then to spend the next 12 hours locked up in this Maitland jail with these guys running around, and I had an absolute blast. And I spent about 9 months with these guys, following them around, and that was the next step into the paranormal. It was really good as well because it taught me a lot. It was my introduction back in those days. It was the beginning of the Facebook wars. The paranormal world back then was all about Facebook, and it was a huge, big battle between these paranormal groups across Australia to see who was going to get the first show on Australian television. And it was brutal, and it was fiercely competitive. And it was an eye-opener for me, and I brought it. And suddenly, in a space of 2 weeks, I was just introduced to this vast vista, this panorama of paranormal activity in Australia, this community that I had no idea existed, that you never know when you're on the outside of it. But then once you're in it, you go, holy crap, yeah, this is very serious.
And did your mindset change about the paranormal as soon as you started to I guess, become involved in those communities?
How so?
In the sense that you maybe were a little bit more believing of it, or there was things in there that you maybe just weren't too sure of, and things started to really solidify themselves for you, as in, you know, paranormal encounters with ghosts, with spirits, things like that?
I can remember that first time. I can remember walking in with road cases and my camera gear, thinking that there were ghosts watching me walking in. I was looking over my shoulder as we were loading in, thinking that, am I going to get possessed now? And I can tell you that after about 3 months of it, you soon realise that a typical... Have you ever been on a paranormal investigation, Kate?
No, I haven't.
Well, how do you fit into all this?
I just had I've had a fascination ever since I was a young child. I got handed a paranormal book and a book about... I think it had like 20 different alien types in it. And, you know, looking back now, you know, it's probably all nonsense and all made up. But ever since then, I was just kind of fascinated on it. And basically, I was one of the world's biggest X-Files fans. And ever since that, I've been hooked. I've been absolutely intrigued about anything weird, anything supernatural, anything kind of out of this world is it's right up my alley.
Wow, we'll have to see if we can find a camp team to convert you at some stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll work on you then.
Yeah.
I tell you, this is how it sort of worked for me. Probably very similar to you. I thought that I believed everything that I read, and I thought that it was all go from the word go. And I, like I said, I walked into that first one thinking that I'm going to get possessed right now. They're watching me, blah, blah, blah. It soon becomes apparent that it all works on a very different sort of level. And 90% of the time, there's nothing going on. There's a lot of wishful thinking. There's a lot of downtime. And there's a need for a lot of mental endurance to stay alert but not too alert. And over the next, definitely the next 3 to 6 months with these guys, I was starting to learn that, okay, there's an irony to it, meaning that just at the point that you kind of think that nothing ever happens and that you can go on 3 or 4 of these things in a row and it just seems like a waste of time, then suddenly something possibly will happen that kind of, you know, gives you a pause for thought, if you like, where you kind of go, that was interesting.
Was there ever a distinct moment that just made you go, yeah, this is absolutely worth everything that we're doing?
That's an odd question, because I had an ulterior motive. Mine was, my observation was that I was fascinated with the people.
Right, okay.
So I was not going into it because of the ghosts. I was going into it because I wanted to see what made these ghost hunters tick.
Yeah, right, okay.
So for me, yes, it was worth it. Yeah, and it introduced me to a group of very fascinating, very passionate people very contradictory, at times volatile, and yet, you know, at other times very pragmatic. So, no, I found it fascinating because I was coming into it from a documentarian's point of view, not a paranormal investigator's point of view.
And after you've done, let's say, a couple of investigations in there, how do you feel about that paranormal world?
How do I feel about now? How did I feel about then?
Oh, I guess after those first couple that you did, because, I mean, you said that you went in there and you're mostly intrigued about the people, but I would presume over a couple of investigations, you know, there may have been something that was in there that was, you know, actually paranormal that was happening. And did that have any effect on you or anything like that?
Yeah, there were odd things that happened. There wasn't. I'm a very, I'm not pragmatic, but I'm pretty level with where I stand with everything. And I actually, my job is not to actually go in and find the answers. My job is to just go in and to hit record. So I'm not there to try and convince anyone that what they're experiencing is real or not real. My job is to actually capture what they're experiencing at the time. And oftentimes that is a completely different world. Some people can be having an episode and I'm not sharing in that. I'm not feeling it, or it's not affecting me. And there is and to put a caveat in that, there is a certain sort of safety through the viewfinder of a camera, and there is a certain sort of distancing that happens with a viewfinder of a camera. And it's not just in the paranormal. This happens in cameras in general. Anyone who's a camera person out there will know exactly what I'm talking about, where you could be doing a fashion show, or you could be doing, you know, a big awards night or your red carpet event or something like that. And there's something, a detachment that happens with a viewfinder of a camera that allows you to float through, that you can have fireworks going off around you and you can have so-and-so, someone really famous coming past, but it doesn't really matter because you're somehow just detached with this camera. And that definitely does play a part in the paranormal. And that can be a curse, but that can also be an asset, because at some stage I think people who get involved in the paranormal, who decide that they're going to make a documentary or they're going to do a film or something, you have to make a choice between, are you a paranormal or an investigator or a ufologist or a cryptozoologist, or are you a filmmaker? And you can't be both. I don't believe you can be both. That's my opinion. Sure, there's people out there probably disagree, but I don't believe you can, because it's an oxymoron. One will outweigh the other.
Absolutely. And it gives you a non-biased view of whatever you're doing there, because it's very easy to go in there and be very much on one side of the fence if you're looking for that.
You have to be a journalistic, almost, you know, detached. And, you know, you still want to have empathy, and you still, you know, obviously you're going to be in there and you still want to enjoy yourself. And if you're not enjoying it, then damn, dude, don't do it, because there's a million other things that will be more beneficial to you to film than going on paranormal investigation. But look, I stayed with guys for about 9 months until I realized that really I wasn't going to be able to contribute any more to them, and I wasn't probably going to learn any more either. And I left the guys, and they went on their way and I went my way. But then I moved on to by that stage I had an American – it was before Netflix. And it was Netflix at that stage was still, I think, doing postal DVDs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And but there was a new online network that had kicked into America called Paranormal Reality TV. I don't think they're still running. But at the stage, they were a startup. And they were kind of – it was like the battle of the startups for the streaming. Streaming still hadn't quite happened because of bandwidth issues.
Yeah.
But in America, they were sort of conquering it a bit quicker than what we were. And they kind of got in contact, and they were headhunting, you know, content creators from around the world who were creating this sort of stuff to create specific content for their show. And so I left these guys and I started, they came to me and I said, yep, I'll have a go. And we worked out a deal and I started a show called The Spirit Level. And the Spirit Level was slightly different. Spirit Level was, I didn't have a huge budget for it, but I had enough for one, me, pretty much to travel around Australia to go off and do what, you know, to make these shows, shoot, film, edit everything. And The Spirit Level was, a step up from what we've been doing prior. And this one was ghosts. It was, I don't think we did any UFO stuff, but it was also cryptozoology. And that was the first time that I actually went out and did a Yowie sort of thing. And the, I'd done ghost hunts and did the whole ghost thing and The Spirit Level definitely covered that. And there were some very interesting things that happened there. And The Spirit Level series was actually, yeah, that's where for me it got very personal or like it got very confronting, like, wow, okay, this is very interesting.
Really?
And yeah, and one of those ones, the most weirdest ones in that was a Yowie episode. And that was strange because they kind of came back and said, look, have you got something you can do that's uniquely Australian? I thought, oh, yeah, I'll do a Yowie sort of thing or something. And I think most people kind of thought that, I think that Yowie's a, you know, I mean, it's kind of, it's one of those weird things you kind of think, come on, really? Yeah, and we went out, and this is actually the first time I met Attila Cowdy. Now, I know you've met Attila before, haven't you?
We've had him on the show previously.
Yeah, well, that's, it was about, 2012, and I went out, Attila took me out. On a Yowie, I was interviewing Attila for The Spirit Level for this new show I was doing, and he was taking me out in the Blue Mountains to hunt Yowies. And that was when we had some weird things happen out there that I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this, that possibly Yowies could exist. That was like one of those. That was actually, you're talking about before, was there a turning point? That was a very distinct turning point for me where I went from being a complete number of like, oh, come on, you gotta be kidding, to like, you know what? I don't think I can discount this as quickly as what I first thought.
Yeah, right. So what happened on that expedition?
I went everywhere. It was I think it was like a 45-minute episode. I went to Queensland, interviewed up in Queensland. I did a couple of things, and we had some Indigenous folk that took me out into around, and we interviewed. They took us out into the Indigenous areas and talked about their beliefs and stuff. And then it ended with Attila and Craig Powell from Whisper. And they took me up to this place in the Blue Mountains where Attila had actually had allegedly an encounter. And after driving for quite some time, we had to hike it on foot through this bushland for about another hour or so until we came to this lookout that overlooked this huge cliff drop on either side. And it was just... it overlooked the water board, apparently. Like, no one could get down there. It's run by the water board, so it's very highly protected in the whole thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And that was just on sunset when we got there. And we were planning on staying there for most of the night. And we were filming and doing interviews and stuff. And it started getting dark. Attila had brought up cooking equipment. He'd been cooking bacon, because apparently bacon had been something that one of the American shows had sort of proven to attract these kind of things. And we're like, oh, yeah, whatever. We're walking backwards and forwards on this walkway, and we've been going backwards and forwards from our first location to the lookout location all night, if you know what I mean. Like, we were dumping gear there, then coming backwards and forwards. So we probably walked this path about, you know, 8 times, you know, in 2 hours or something like that. The first thing that got weird was we suddenly found this huge feces this huge crap had been done in this walkway in the period of time since we last walked it and come back again. And we went, that's really odd. We looked at it and had a bit of a skip. We're obviously making jokes about it, but there's all hair in it and all sorts of stuff. And we go, okay, yeah, it could be something and all sorts of stuff. And that's a bit odd. We're going back to the lookout and stuff. And then we started having things thrown at us.
Oh, really?
Which was completely new for me. And I wasn't too sure what was going on with that. And these were started with small rocks and then became sizable rocks. The problem was with it, though, is that they were being thrown up a cliff because we were on a cliff face at the top on a lookout overlooking an area, and they were being launched from down, way down on the ground, up and being lobbed onto it.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, I still talk about now, and that's still quite odd. I mean, that's like, you know, 100 feet or something like that. I mean, it's a fair drop. And then Attila started doing, you know, he liked to do these yowie calls, you know. So he started doing these yowie calls once in there, and then we started to hear. And we've been hearing things all night, like you hear animals. And look, I understand that a koala, I don't know if you've ever heard a koala bear go off when it's angry, but a koala bear sounds like Satan with its pants on fire.
That, absolutely, really, they're terrifying.
They're just terrifying. And we've been hearing everything. So, yeah, you kind of get a feel for it, owls and all that sort of stuff. Attila's doing this yowie call, which it sounds like you kind of pretty much think, yeah, 6 foot five, 6 foot six Hungarian. He's going to be able to do a good call, and he does. He does a fantastic yowie call. And then we started to hear it being replied, like sending back to us. And so it was like, oh, this is getting weird. This is getting really weird. So we're doing this to and fro, backwards and forwards across this canyon. And we thought, like, yeah, it could be someone playing, you know, silly buggers with us or something. And there's always that possibility. The problem is, though, again, this canyon was so deep, so far, so wide. I mean, down there, it was an off-limits area. It was all cordoned off by the government. It was after dark. Anyone who's mucking around out there, I mean, it would be very dangerous at that stage because there were dangerous drops everywhere. It'd be a hell of a game to play just for the sake of a silly joke because you'd really be taking your life on your own hands. So anyway, it freaked us out. It freaked me out. Like I came back going, wow. So I then took the recordings. I edited the show. And before I did the final edit, I took the show to a biologist called Gary Oppert, who lives in Queensland. And Gary had his own radio show with the ABC. He's a biologist. He's pretty much dedicated his whole life to identifying Australian wildlife. He's an expert. So I took it to him thinking that, you know, he's going to sit there and say, boys, you know, this is this type of owl you were communicating with. But unfortunately, he didn't. And Gary at that stage revealed to us that he'd actually believed in yowies, which I found shocking.
Oh, wow.
Because he's a scientist, right? Well, I mean, and I suppose the yowie, it is science. I mean, there is evidence of Gigantopithecus, if you go through the chain.
Yeah, most definitely.
You know, if there's anything, it's probably more, there's more tangibility with something like a yowie or a Bigfoot because of it has actually existed at some stage than there is, say, of a ghost. You know what I mean? We've got some sort of an evidence of it. But anyway, so I played him the footage. And, the guy said, in his opinion, he thought we called up a yowie, which completely floored me. And to this day, I still have difficulty coming to terms with it. I'm still not sure about it. I still sit there and go, you know, but then there's a part of me that goes, well, this is a guy that obviously, you know, spends his life kind of doing this sort of stuff and he thinks they're real as well. So one of those hard ones that I go, well, yeah, don't know. It's a question mark, and it's one that I'd like to revisit again, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, Attila's working on his own documentary with Track, which I'm absolutely fanging for. I think that's going to be some eye-opening footage on that one from what I've heard.
I tell you what, if anyone in Australia is going to make a film, and we've been doing some little bit of stuff with Attila on Track as well, right? But I can tell you this now, that if anyone in Australia is going to make a film that is going to lift the lid off this thing and is qualified enough to do it as well, it's definitely Attila Cowdy. I mean, this is going to be a very unique film. And, yeah, I think it's long overdue. We often had joked. It's since that time Attila and I have often joked about the Yowie thing, and it's been one of our things that said Australia needs a Yowie documentary. It needs it. It's long overdue. And it's good to see that he's doing it wisely. That's what I like about Attila. He's not rushing it. He's been working on Track for, I mean, over a year now, taking his time with it. He's moving cautiously through all the evidence and all the alleged evidence and all these different claims. He's going through all the groups that are, you know, saying that they've had experiences or whatever. And I think it's going to be a very special film.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it, actually. It's, like you said, there's nothing else out there in Australia on the Yowie in the sense of documentary-wise, and it's about time.
I think that's an unfortunate thing. I don't think there's much, there's not much paranormal, and when I say paranormal and UFO, I mean crypto, I mean everything. There's not that much from Australia at all.
No, there's not really.
And that's a shame because, I mean, we've got 26 million people here in this country. It's a huge land. The land mass is equal to pretty much the entirety of America. We've got a slither of their population. Australia's got such a background, such a history. And there are so many weird folklore and cultural things out there. But, we just don't have, the manpower to do it. It's not the people making it.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's probably a really good transition into, I guess, what gave you the drive to do Australian Skies?
Australian Skies, look, it came about from a simple idea. It was 2014 when we were tossing about doing the next project. I'd just finished off the thing Ghosts of Casula. The Casula powerhouse had hired me to do a big documentary for them about the Casula powerhouse in Sydney. And I'd gone down for the screening. And I think at the same time, Paracon was happening. And I went down there and I was just looking for something to do with UFOs. I knew that Star Wars was coming out in 2015. It was 2014, and I thought, look, you know, this is going to be the time.
Get on the hype train.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's half, I mean, I know that sounds quite salacious, but you do have to sit there and read your environment. And if you're smart, or, you know, not even smart but half smart, I mean, you just have to read your environment and you've got to have a finger in the wind, so to speak, like just seeing which way it's blowing. And it had just been up to about that time. It was definitely by that 2014 in Australia, it had all been paranormal. And I say by 2014, it was in its death throes. And you could see it was like it was just exhausted. It was everyone was exhausted from the paranormal and ghosts and all sort of stuff. And there just hadn't been that much sort of UFO documentaries out there. And it was like, you know what? I think it's time for a UFO documentary to be made. And that's kind of where we started thinking about Australian Skies, something that was uniquely Australian. And the goal of Australian Skies was to listen to people, to find people and their stories, to listen to them and to tell their stories. And I think that's one of the things that makes us made and makes Australian skies different to a certain degree, is that it's it is about people and it is about listening to their stories and telling stories, you know, about their experiences.
And it doesn't really try to push a narrative. It's only sharing what happens to these people.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing, because sometimes they go on wild goose chases, you know. But and I think that you know, that's the thing. It's about real life, and you. I think one of the things that my dad said was, you know, you've got to walk to find out, you know, about someone. You've got to walk a mile in their shoes and all this sort of stuff. You know, and it's like. And that's really what it is you almost embed yourself with someone for a year, or you start to walk in their shoes and you start to see, and oftentimes, not a goose chase, but it can go in unpredictable areas where you sit there and you think, well, that doesn't really fit a really nice Hollywood narrative. I wish it would, but often it doesn't. And there's U-turns and there's quick turns and stuff, and you just got to – you're really, as opposed to driving it, you've almost got to let yourself be the passenger and just hit record and just follow, you know.
And when you were recording Australian Skies 1 and 2, was there anything in there that made you question the existence of UFOs and if they're real, if they're maybe from out of this world or anything like that?
Look, to be fair, with 1 and 2, every 5 minutes you're questioning. There's a lot of stuff that you would... specifically in number two was one that was like a pendulum. Like it was, you were swinging from, not so much do you believe, not believe, but do you think it's this, or and then you swing back, do you think it's that, do you think it's this, do you think it's that. And and the weird thing about that one was that one was with Liam. Liam was fascinating. His case was a fascinating case. And, there were times in that where it actually got scary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had to really be very careful, especially in the middle of the film. In the middle of the film, Liam talks about how he used to see these strange things in the sky. He had this turning point in his life where he was just a normal dad, normal husband, and then obviously he had a particular date where this, it just, his whole life just came crashing down on him.
Oh, wow.
And he started to see these strange objects in the sky. There was a real turn in the film where we'd always thought that they were being attracted to him. But in actual fact, Liam came to a conclusion that they weren't necessarily being attracted to him, that they were being attracted, or I don't know if attracted is the right word, but let's just use attracted. They were being attracted to a factory that was behind where he was seeing all these things.
Really?
He was really perhaps just observing a certain percentages of these sightings, as
he
opposed
was to right time, right place.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that could be wrong as well. And that's the whole idea. We weren't sure what, so we had to work that out. And then in the film, he gave a lot of details out to where this was. And we had to beep it out because of legal reasons. We had lawyers there going, look, you can't put this in Australia because this is not kosher. You can't do it. We had to beep it out where the sightings were happening and what, and basically it was that he decided that he'd sussed out that this factory was happening, this big industrial complex, for want of a better term, was possibly a landing area or a takeoff area for these things.
Oh, wow.
And so he was like, okay, maybe I'm not actually, I'm sure he's probably attracting them, or there was some sort of a symbiotic thing going on perhaps, but there was also probably a side of it that these things were actually landing and taking off. And it was like, what was it, the chicken or the egg? Did this symbiotic relationship happen after he started seeing these things when he shouldn't have, or did they happen afterwards? You know, so it was all this sort of unraveling that we were all trying to work out. And so he started to decide, he found this warehouse sort of big factory complex, and he decided to go down and stuff it out at night. And he went down there and staked it out for several nights and came back with an interesting sort of idea of what it was. We heard about this and we decided, Attila and I, because Attila was helping me film it at this stage, Attila and I and the film crew, we decided to go out and stake it out for ourselves. So we set off to this industrial area in the middle of on a Friday night after hours to see if we could verify what Liam had said. And, I mean, we blocked it out in the film, but I'm going to tell you what it was. It was an aerospace company.
You're kidding.
No. And we were like, holy crap, this is actually getting pretty serious. And then we started doing more research, and there were several aerospace companies in this area. And there was a bit more to that story, but this is where the documentary side of it comes in. If you were just an investigator, you could probably go full guns blazing and go straight into it. But as a documentary maker, you do have to sort of protect and abide by the wishes of the people that you're working with. And at that stage, Liam had been going through a lot of stuff, and he was not interested. He was actually terrified. I didn't want to have anything to do with any of that sort of stuff. And he had reason to believe that if we had pushed it, would there be some pushback? So we sort of backed off from it. But, it was definitely an interesting – that was an interesting point for me where I was like, wow, okay, this is – I could see the rabbit hole. We're starting to slip down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, right. That's fascinating.
Yeah, you've got to be careful of that. It's very easy to do. I'll tell you, Kay, a lot of stuff at times can seem very simple on the outset, and because we're all rational and, you know, we're pragmatic and we like to put things together piece by piece, at times, yeah, there are rabbit holes that you do come across that you kind of go, wow, that is a black hole there that is begging to be explored, but am I the one to do it, or do I have the facilities to do it? And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, but you've got to be very careful with the fight you pick.
Wow. There's not much you can really say to that. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I'm kind of shocked about the revelation of what that company may have been. And I'm sure if the listeners do a little bit of research, you know, they might be able to dig a little bit deeper on that themselves. But that's absolutely incredible there, Don.
Yeah, I'm not going to say where it was. And we actually were very careful in the film to block out where it was. And why we did it as well, why we blocked it out in the film, is because we wanted to see if anyone could write through to us, or we wanted to watch the internet to start to watch the area. And it's not an area that you would think would be suspicious or anything like that. But since then, yeah, we have come across and we have had people write to us, and we've had a gentleman in particular who picked it all, and he wrote through to us, and we were like, wow, okay, you got to keep your mouth shut. But yeah, you've absolutely nailed it. And there's probably a little bit more going on than what we think.
So, I mean, after doing those two documentaries, what's your thoughts on the whole UFO phenomena?
I think it's a fascinating time to be alive right now with the UFO phenomena. I tell you what, I'm going to put some money down on the table. I reckon in the next 3 years, 5 years tops, but I'm saying it's more like 3 years, we're going to have, this is like saying the second coming of Jesus is about to happen, but anyway, I definitely think in the next 3 years we're going to have what I suppose a lot of people would call disclosure. I have no doubt. I have no doubt. In the next 3 to 5 years, but I'll say three. And I reckon Donald Trump will get back into government for a second term. And I'd say he's going to be instrumental as well. So I think that what I find fascinating is the Tom DeLonge thing with Blink 182. What's your take on that?
I haven't watched it yet. I'm really, really, really keen, but I've heard nothing but amazing things from it.
Here's a funny thing. Tom DeLonge, Blink 182, we've all grown up listening to Blink 182. We all know who Tom DeLonge is. I mean, this is a gentleman who wrote a song about having sex with a dog.
Yes.
And yet he somehow managed to get into this amazing position where he's this liaison between government and almost the populace.
It's fascinating. It's amazing.
And for what, I mean, I can be as critical, and I can be as sarcastic and as cynical, and I'm probably leaning more on the cynical side myself. But I tell you what, I've been watching the news, and even in Australia, like you watch The Project in Australia, you watch The Project at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, right? Even these guys, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, they had a thing on UFOs on there, and there was no X-Files music. There was no sarcastic rambles. And there was footage of, you know, the Tic Tac UFO that was just recently seen last year. That
in the thermal version?
Yeah, yeah. And everything was To the Stars Academy was down. The bug was there, the To the Stars Academy. And the dialogue, what I found fascinating was the dialogue, it was on the table, and it was with all the comedians are there and the lawyers and stuff like Wade and all the comedians are there. This conversation was on the table about this UFO thing, and they all talked about it without any sort of jokes or sarcasm or just mockery. And it's very interesting to see this change in Australian media. And possibly, I think we're going to see this more. I beg everyone to actually start to pay more attention to the media, what to do with UFOs, and watch the tone. Have you noticed it change? The tone has changed from where it used to be. And almost now, you'll still see the X-Files music being played when someone does a UFO story. But if they do, the news station is cheesy, or they're 10 years or 5 years behind. They're almost like, they're not cool. They're not a cool radio. They're not a cool TV station. They're sort of like the poor man sort of station, or they're the local community station or something like that.
Yeah,
but
for
sure. The mainstream ones actually seem to be having a sensible dialogue about it.
Oh, so, most definitely. I mean, yeah, like you said, you just have to look at any of these larger, I guess, networks. And the stories that they're putting out, it's almost like they're taking it borderline seriously.
Yeah.
And it's almost, and to the conspiracy theorists inside me, it's, are they priming the public for disclosure in a few years?
I think you've just said what I was not wanting to say, but was thinking. I do think we're getting primed, and I think that's going to be the case. I think they're getting ready. And I'm not a disclosure movement person. I'm not into that. I listen to it and I watch it, and I'm happy to observe and to dialogue about it. But I'm not a card-bearing disclosure movement person. My opinion is just based on watching media movements and someone who watches the media and just seeing the subtle changes and some of these great leaps that are happening. And I hate to say it, I have to admit it, the Tom DeLonge, regardless of what we all think and what we all say, and obviously he's come under a lot of criticism for not delivering this or not delivering that, I actually think it's phenomenal what's happening.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So I think it's an exciting time. That's what I think it is. I would have never, 5 years ago, I'd have said, nah, it's never going to happen. But today I sit down and think, all right, I'll give you a countdown timer. Let's watch it happen.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll be sure to keep an eye on that one there, Don. Well, mate, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been an absolute pleasure to talk to, and it's really interesting to kind of get behind the lens and see the mindset of a filmmaker when it comes into the paranormal realm.
No, it's been my pleasure, and we'll have to have another chat when this third Australian Skies gets released. We might do a bit of a review or something like that.
Yeah, mate, absolutely. I mean, your third one, it's the Min Min Light, and the Min Min Light is one of my favorite topics on this radio show. It's a listener favorite too, so I'll definitely be picking good. Your ears to pieces about that one.
Well, don't worry, you're going to love this one. You're going to have a lot to pick as well, so we'll have a lot to go over. So, yeah, this one's a good one.
Fantastic, mate. Well, yeah, thank you again for coming on.
No worries, man. It's been my pleasure.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.